outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.
Welcome to Wired to Hunt's Rut Fresh Radio, bringing you the latest reports from the Whitetail Woods. And now, your hosts, Casey Smith and Tyler Jones.
This is Rut Fresh Radio, powered by Vortix. I'm your host, Casey Smith, and this week we're talking about how good access can get you on a big buck. What's up, y'all? This is Rut Fresh Radio, powered by Vortex, and today we are talking to hunters from all across the country who've got some pretty slick tactics. I mean, even some stuff you've never heard of.
Slactics,
baby, that helped them get in on some giant bucks and have some really great hunts. So look forward to that. But right now, I am actually in the room with one Tyler Jones, the mountain man himself, Tyler Jones, Mr. Mule Deer Splitter, Tyler Jones. Man, how are you feeling, Tyler? Are you back over 200 yet? Or are you still
actually,
slim pickings?
I'm 0.2 pounds over 200.
That's
right
good,
now.
Dude. Yep. All right.
I just weighed, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
been hogging out Southern Style the last week or so.
My goal is to be the second heaviest person on the element team. And I've been that quite a few times. I don't think I am right now. After my hunt, I'm still a little higher than you were because I only hunted for 2 days. So
yeah.
I got to pig out on the way home and eat some chilies.
What happens when you're a good hunter, man?
I know, dude.
You don't have to hunt very hard.
I don't know if I say that. But no matter what, our buddy Mark Kenyon will never weigh as much as you or I.
Even though he's taller.
He is. What did y'all call him?
Pencil.
Pencil, man.
That's what I like to call people like
that's
that.
Right. Mark is in Idaho hunting hard right now, so he's not on the show with us today, but we'll have him and Josh on the show next week to discuss all of their adventures in Idaho and get the lowdown on what it's like hunting bucks in the West and what you can look forward to now. But Tyler, last week we talked a little bit about your mule deer hunt.
Yep.
And this is all sharpening us, getting us ready for upcoming whitetail hunts. But why don't you tell me a little bit about how you changed as a hunter hunting that mule deer?
So actually the preparation of like leading up to that hunt changed me as a shooter, really. I knew that I would draw this tag, that I had the points to draw it and would draw it.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically since I've known that, even before I drew the tag, probably I started really like dialing in my shooting and being very consistent day in and day out with shooting. I think there's a lot of guys out here that don't understand this when I say this, but prior to doing this, I guess you could say full time, I sometimes would pull out the bow about August and start shooting for the first time since November,
mm-hmm.
pretty much. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of guys do that. And I don't think it's, I don't feel like, for me, it's a lot like riding a bike. I could literally pull my bow out and shoot accurately out to 40,
mm-hmm.
which is all, I mean, like really accurately out to 40, which is all I needed to shoot at deer back then. But mm-hmm. We do a lot of different things across the country now that might require different positions to be in when you shoot / different distances. And I did shoot this mule deer at a long distance, and mm-hmm. I did that. I actually was 10 yards inside of what I felt was good. And I shot a group, a very tight group. My last group that I shot at distance was what I basically decided that was going to be, you know, what I ended up shooting at. I actually talked to a guy last night at a fish fry, and this isn't a fish boil for all you Wisconsiners out there. Isn't that what they call it, a boil? It's what a boil. It's a boil, right?
A boil when they, like, do, like, I don't
potatoes
know, crabs
and
stuff?
No, yeah. I think they do. They have like a deal. They're probably yelling at me right now. But it's like a deal where you throw fish in to a boil instead of like
they
a fry.
They boil fish?
I think so.
It's definitely not
salt
a lutefisk.
Would be okay.
Not a lutefisk, you know?
A little
for
salt.
Sure.
Would be
yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
No, anyway, at this fish fry, this guy told me, you know, he said he was shooting good out to 80. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah, well, you know, good enough to kill a deer. And I start thinking about it, and I'm like, well, some people think that if you're shooting at the range, you know, inside of a deer's lungs,
mm-hmm.
then you're good to go at that range. Mm-hmm. And I'm just telling you right now, you guys know, it is blackout city whenever a deer comes in sometimes.
I believe it was Tony Treach that said you can half that. The some article I was reading.
What's his name? The guy that kills big mule deer.
Ulmer.
Randy Ulmer.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's what he says too. So
yeah, like, I've heard him say that too. And as you say,
like
that.
Half of that or whatever.
Yeah, which so. I don't actually agree with either. But it's a good
either.
Principle to possibly live by. But I would say before you answered the question, that was what I was going to say. Is the answer for you is and knowing you for a while, like that's the thing that has changed the most I've seen in you as a hunter is your comfort at longer distances, and I think it comes from just. Some dedication to shooting for
yeah.
sure. And you're good at it. I mean, you shot a really awesome whitetail last year at pretty long range.
50.
And then, yeah.
We'll say it.
Yeah. And
we'll
then you
it.
Shot, well, you know, that's so relative for people, you know,
yeah.
but yeah, 50. And then you shot your
It's weird
deer.
To say because I know there's people out there that think I'm an idiot for doing that, you know.
Yeah.
But
it was perfect.
I mean, would you say Levi is an idiot for shooting 50, a deer at 50?
Levi's the man.
Levi could put it through his eye socket.
That's right,
okay?
I guarantee you.
You know what I mean?
You're
I'm
not Levi,
Levi,
but you're
no,
not.
But I practice a lot.
You're not people either.
And I learn like what I where I can put it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I'm shooting a 4-inch group at a distance,
mm-hmm.
that I should be able to shoot a whitetail at that. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly.
All in all, ethics are literally based on yourself
yeah.
and what you think. Right?
Absolutely.
So.
And if y'all are interested in watching that mule deer hunt, it's absolutely awesome. It is on the Element YouTube channel. Go check that out if you haven't. That hunt is epic, and I can't wait to see that deer. But back to your thing about like how it's on you. I just went to Arizona, shot a cow elk there, and on the pack out with the meat, I had my bow in my hand, and I rolled off a rock and fell on my bow, and we were just shooting out here today. And I wouldn't shoot at a deer at 50 right now. I can shoot good enough, but I need to go do a little work. You know, like inside of 40, I would feel pretty good. But like, and that kind of stuff is going to change throughout the season or even on a hunt. Like, for instance, in 2019, I drew a really awesome tag for elk, and that was a 9-day hunt you and I were on. And at the beginning of that hunt, I felt really good at 70.
Mm-hmm.
But by about day 5 or 6, you haven't shot your bow much. You've, you know, been doing whatever, had that thing fall off a tree or whatever, yeah. You know how I am. I like to kind of balance my bow places. you need to be mindful of that kind of stuff while you're on a hunting trip, whether it's banged around in the truck, it's
yeah.
been on a horse, on a pack in, whatever it might be. Like things change throughout a hunt.
Mm.
So like on day 7 of a hunt, maybe your range isn't quite what it was because
yeah.
you haven't been practicing it much. Or maybe you're diligent and you do your practice midday or maybe you have the time for that. I don't know.
It's scenario specific. Definitely.
It is.
And like the ranch buck,
mm-hmm.
which was the year before, I had him at 49, completely calm. No, didn't know anything was going on. He was
mm-hmm.
out there, like in the middle of the open, and I'm sitting like 10 foot up in a tree, so good angles and everything, at 49, didn't take the shot. And
mm-hmm.
I say in that video, like, man, I just haven't been shooting. It's it's late November and I haven't been shooting, and I just didn't feel comfortable with it, you know?
Yep. So
it really is specific, and I try to make the best decision I can in the moment, man. Mm-hmm. That was one of the biggest bucks, maybe the biggest buck I'd ever would have shot at the time. So it just happens, man. You just got to play it by ear, make the best decision you can. Sometimes you live with it. Mark knows. Mark's had his ups and downs over the years too, man. And just that's what it is when you deer hunt a lot.
And that's one of the things that makes bow hunting exciting, is that it's not a for sure deal, even whenever you pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you've got a rifle or a muzzleloader or whatever, you know, within a close range, it's still not 100%. Crazy things happen. But like you and I know, we grew up doing a lot of rifle hunting. Like it's, you know, if you got a deer 100 yards with a rifle, it's dead to rights usually, you know, with a bow, especially on an East Texas whitetail. 20 yards ain't nothing. Them suckers might be in the next county by the time Eric gets there, you know? So it's a cool thing, and it makes bow hunting super exciting. And today on the Rut Fresh portion of this podcast, we are actually going to talk to some dudes who are real excited about things, because some exciting things are happening in the woods. We've got Brent Purvis from Georgia. We've got Brett Joy from Just Hunt Club in New Hampshire. We got Jeff Danker from Buck Ventures in Kansas. And we've got Grant Forney, the Everyday Outdoorsman in Maryland. And these dudes have been doing some really good hunting. A lot of success in there. Some big bucks going down for like mid-September, which is, I would almost call this like the second lull or the first of the second. You know, people talk about the October lull, which is controversial in itself. Mm-hmm. But like when the velvet's on, the deer are on summer patterns. Mm-hmm. Velvet starts coming off, everything goes haywire, right? Like you and I have cameras across the country, and all of a sudden, we aren't seeing the same bucks once the velvet comes off. Everything goes crazy. So to be able to get on a big buck right now, once the velvet is off, is like a pretty tough thing to do. But it sounds like these guys have it figured out. And I do think that if you listen to kind of some of their tactics and some of the things they employ, as crazy as they might be, you just might be able to get on a big buck yourself. Now we've got Brent Purvis from Georgia on here. He's a pastor down there in Georgia. Brent, what's been going on, man?
Man, it's been fun. I've got a good one this week. The deer have been running kind of together. As you guys know, they've been in velvet, but buddy, I just missed it. So just missed the velvet, which has been a dream of mine. But
yeah,
I got some velvet still hanging off this deer, but got a good one the other night.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I saw a picture of that deer actually on Philip Culpepper's story. Apparently, he'd been, you know, talking to you about it and stuff, and that was really awesome, man. And I don't know, it's kind of cool to see them just out of velvet, too, because those antlers look so fresh. They're so sharp, you know, they haven't been rubbed up too much. So how are you kind of patterning these deer going into this hunt?
So this deer, you know, early season pattern, some of my favorite stuff early, and then you got the rut. We got two different opportunities here, but early season, what I did is I kind of did a scarcity tactic. I usually dump out a lot of corn the first month, but the problem is they turn nocturnal before opening day here in Georgia, and it's hot. So I did scarcity. I put a little bit of corn out, and I let it go dry for 4 or 5 days. A little bit of corn, let it go dry. And what happened is that dominant buck wanted to come in there the fastest and get that corn before those other little 8-pointers and 4-pointers. So that was my tactic, and it paid off. And then I did something a little bit crazy. I got winded on my first hunt, and he was upwind. So, I mean, I had everything covered, sprayed down everything. So the next night I'd been pouring Acorn Rage in there with my corn. This sounds crazy, but I took a trash bag, non-scented, poured Acorn Rage in there, let it sit for 24 hours. So when I got up there, all the scents were familiar for this buck. I smelled like food, I guess.
Dude, I've heard during the rut, you got to be careful with stuff like that, you know what I mean?
yeah, you got to be careful on that one, man.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Don't be using that tactic in November.
That's
sure.
it. It's all right to go
doe and he said. Yeah, you may get more than what you want. What you ask for.
I'm telling you, dude.
It's all right to go in the woods smelling like a snack in September, man. But you do it in November, it's gonna be rough.
That's right, man. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, you said that that you got winded. Do you think, you know, one of the things we've been talking with some of these guys about this week is the access that they've used. Did that have to do anything with access? And talk a little bit about how you were accessing this.
You know, I had good access. I was fortunate enough, we cut trails all throughout here. So I would ride my Ranger right down to the spot where I needed to feed. And I only did it at noon. So I stayed away from their hours that they would feed. But what happened is this deer, we actually called him Johnny Ringo off of, you remember that movie Tombstone?
Mm-hmm.
There was remember Johnny Ringo? He talked about that he was high strung after Doc killed him. He said he tore, poor soul, he was just too high strung. This deer was we've watched him for 4.5 years. So he's a 5-year-old deer, or 5.5-year-old deer. He was high strung. So he felt something was off. So I feel my access was good. We even moved the stand where he comes in, the entry point, he would come in and not get around me. That's what was amazing about it, is that he was 50 yards, you know, upwind of me and just felt something off. But this deer's always been high strung. So that was something. I think I've talked to Philip Culpepper, my buddy off Hunt Club, and I was talking to him every evening. He said, man, got to change your tactics a little bit up. And that's where I started adjusting with the corn some more, feeding up a little bit more, and then I actually came up with the crazy tactic of smelling like food. And that night I killed him, he came within 15 yards and never smelled.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's cool, dude. So tell me more about that hunt that you were able to capitalize on.
Yeah. I knew he had been coming in there hunting. I gave him rest after he busted me. So I said, all right, this is a smart deer. I gave him 2 days rest, but kept feeding him. Then came back in, and the wind died down a little bit that night, which was perfect. It was cool for Georgia. That's odd. Y'all know how that is in Texas. Mm-hmm. It's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And got in there, and 2 8-pointers came out first. And I thought, man, that's strange. And then they started getting weary, started doing the whole thing where they start, you know, kind of kneeling down and backing away. And I knew I had him then. And he came up 15 yards from me, hung behind a tree for, it felt like an eternity. It probably wasn't 5 minutes. And then he took a couple steps at 20 yards, and I just made a bust a perfect heart shot. But it came out the front of in front of the opposite leg, but it blew his heart out, and he didn't go 25 yards down the hill. I mean, but using a G5, one of them G5 mega meats, and I have never seen so much blood. I mean, I've shot deer with 30-06 has not seen that much blood.
Yeah. It looked like a doorpost in Egypt, man. You know, just
you ain't kidding. I've never heard that before. That's good.
I'm gonna have to use that on video this year, man.
That's good right there.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. Man, it just feels so good when they're in tight. And you know, the shot is such a big deal, especially on these southern jumpy mm-hmm. deer. You know, like just the I don't know, the calmness that there is, and just knowing it's a shot that you for sure can make comfortably, you know, like anything out past 30. I mean, I practice in the yard real far, you know, but anything out past 30 is you're really kind of a toss up a little bit on whitetail, you know, but when you got them that 15, 20 range, it's like they're dead meat, as you said, with the broadheads. Mega meat. So, yeah.
And it's so difficult too, because the other side of that is they can hear this deer's on edge. So he could hear that, you know, me mm-hmm. pulling back that. Uh-huh. Bow, and it got his attention, and I knew how big he was already. He should score number 3 in the county, Muskogee County, on bow kills in the history of the county. We're kind of a near city limits, but we got like 30 acres right outside the city limits, so he should score number 3. But he was so on edge, he was so big, I knew he was going to be a record, so I had to not look at his antlers. I'm just looking at, all right, how do I tuck this thing in here as tight as possible, as quick as possible? Because the moment I pulled, he looked.
Man, yeah. We don't bust the tapes out real often, but it sounds, you know, on a really big deer like that, it's definitely something to consider. I'm assuming you've measured him already. What did he tape out at?
He taped out at like 142 and some change. And of course, they got to let the 60-day period go by and then send the, you know, official measures. But for around here, you know, that's not a giant. I've killed 160s with my bow and stuff like that. But in the city limits like this, he's going to hit the record with that.
Yeah, man. So,
awesome, dude.
You Georgia boys like him urban bucks, it seems, man. That's cool, dude.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you were to look at the upcoming forecast and just all the different, situations that are going on out there in the whitetail woods, what would you rate on a scale from 1 to 10 what you expect the deer movement to be like, specifically buck movement, in the next week?
In the next week, I would say they're still in that pattern stage. If you're feeding up, they're still good. It's cooling down here in Georgia, so it's kind of getting exciting. Usually it's hotter than this, so I'd say the movement probably, I'd say a 6 or 7, but you still can pattern these deer right now, which is exciting. It hasn't lost that. Y'all know how it is. The first 2 to 3 weeks, you know, it's just as exciting as the rut. And here in Georgia, southern Georgia, it when it dies off. So you go dead there for, you know, a little while before November comes and Thanksgiving, and then it kicks back up. So right now is the time to be in the woods, man.
Awesome, dude. Well, that gets me pumped for sure. And I think I'm going to leave and go hunting somewhere here pretty soon. But hey, I appreciate you hopping on with this, man, and giving us the rundown there in Georgia. And hopefully you'll get some more time in the stand this year.
Absolutely, man. I look forward to it. Thank y'all for what y'all do.
We got Brett Joy on the phone now. He is from Just Hunt Club, and he is in New Hampshire. Brett, what's going on, man?
Oh, just at work today, waiting on the next cold front, and hopefully some good trail camera pictures to point me in the right direction.
That's cool. So your day-to-day is going to work and just checking that app the whole time looking for deer, right?
Well, that's what I'm – which ends up happening more.
We won't tell them.
Not, but need to get some work done too. Well, one of the owners of the business, so I'm only have myself to look at in the mirror.
Gotcha.
So.
That self accountability is tough, man.
Exactly.
That's cool, man. So, here lately, what's been the vibe up there in New Hampshire?
You know, it's a funky time. It always is this time of year. You go kind of we're in sort of a transition phase from the summer patterns to fall patterns. You have deer that are in velvet. You have deer that are shed velvet. Some that are really starting to feel that spike in testosterone, some that aren't. So it's kind of highly variable this time of year. But we're kind of, like I said, in that transition phase. We open the 15th of September. So it's kind of an interesting phase. It can be kind of feast or famine, if you will. If you're on a deer that is kind of in his pattern still, or maybe he's changed to a new pattern, you've figured him out, he's going to be on it for a bit, and you have a really good opportunity to kill him. But I think the general theme is that most of these deer are still pretty relaxed. They're still pretty daylight active, and you know, they favor more to a consistent pattern than other times in the season.
Sure. So what's the weather like, and how does it compare to normal weather patterns?
You know, we had an extremely hot summer, but it seems like those cooler temperatures are starting to move in. We had a good cold front the last few days, right for the opener. Actually, the kind of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, which are the first 3 days of the season, we had a good cold front. Our team killed a buck and a bear and had some good hunts. So, yeah, the temps are good looking out. It did warm up a little bit, but we look like we have another really good cold front coming in the end of the week. So I would say you can't really ask for much more than that.
Yeah.
Cold fronts, the first 10 days of the season that happen to fall on weekends for the guys that can't hunt, you know, during the week. So
y'all should be slocking them, huh?
Yeah, we should be.
That's cool. So with the hot weather, is that, does that make water a scarcity, or are you okay there?
You know, it doesn't seem like it. We have a lot of ponds. We have a lot of lakes, streams. Seems like water's everywhere. I'll be honest, I haven't focused a ton of on water in the past, watering holes or building them, anything like that, because I just haven't seen much on water whenever I'm cameras on water in the past. So admittedly, it's been, you know, a few years since I've tried, but I just haven't seen a huge draw there.
I feel you. I'm the same way, man. Like water's tough for me. I got a buddy, Tony, who knows a lot about that stuff and tries to convince me all the time that I need to be hunting on a water hole, but it's tough for me, you know. Even hanging cameras, I don't see super consistency that makes me want to be there, you know. So,
no, not to say that in different areas or different situations that could be the ticket, but sure. It doesn't seem like it quite is in our circumstance.
What is the ticket right now in New Hampshire?
I think the ticket is finding. Well, I'd say, given your targeting mature buck, which I know not every listener is, you know, really focused on that, but we are, is finding one of these deer and then trying to hone in on exactly his like small pattern, because they're not moving terribly far right now. So I think the biggest challenge right now is finding one, and this landscape we hunt in is big timber, lots of mountains, thousands and thousands of acre, no ag. So finding one can be probably at least half the battle, is locating where that buck is in this period of the season. And then once you do, trying to get tight to where he's moving and manage your entry or exit, manage your wind and hunt them accordingly. We like to try to hunt them focused on cold fronts. That seems like that's the trigger that gets these mature deer moving in daylight earlier in the season. You know, it's tough in the mountains to sit right on top of a bed like you may in different, you know, different regions of the country. A bedding area, maybe a 30 or 40 acre area on a mountain rather than, you know, 1 or 2 acres. So it's tough to kind of calibrate how close you can get to that bed. So if you're hunting in a bedding area, you have a high probability of potentially bumping that deer. So we're trying to stay on the edge. And what that means is we may need a deer to move 100 yards or we may need them to move 500 yards. So we're looking for those cold fronts to get them kind of out of that bedding area, you know, out of the areas that we think are, you know, that they could be in and moving. So that's kind of the ticket. As far as food sources, it seems like there's food everywhere this time of year. We did have a great hunt on a buck coming to a food plot, but that's kind of the exception. We don't have many food plots and we don't have many ag areas. So I'd say the number one food source right now is red oaks. Mm. We have at least in the areas we hunt, an abundance of them. They're everywhere. As long as you have some in the area, you're in good shape. I think trying to identify like a feed tree is probably pretty useless because we have thousands upon thousands of them pretty evenly distributed across areas these deer are in. So if you can find, you know, some of them in the vicinity of where there's bucks hiding out, you're in good shape. It's kind of like, okay, well, you know, he's in here, there's food, where do you think he's bedding? And then what we like to focus on is even scrapes this time of year, close to a, you know, where we think is a bedding area and a food source, and hunt those scrapes, because when those cold fronts hit, it triggers movement and they kind of hit those scrapes and we can be in good luck or in good shape, I should say.
Man, that does sound like some pretty killer tactics there. If you were to look at the next week upcoming, I know you mentioned that cold front that's kind of going to hit here later in the week. What would you predict the buck movement being like on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would say it's probably going to be, man, we got some really good weather coming in. I think it could be an 8+.
Ooh, yeah. That's an exciting number.
Yeah, no, it really is, because, you know, if these bucks start to fall into these shed velvet, fall into an early season pattern, you can get on them. And then we have these temperatures, which here I'm looking at, like, the end of this week, we have highs in the low 50s. That's below average for sure.
Yeah.
For this time of year, northwest winds, high pressure. Yeah, it could be really good if you're in the right spot. If you're not in the right spot, you're not on that deer, you're not gonna you're gonna be crying. But if you are, you could be in the money. So
that's cool, man.
Upon the spot, you could be an 8+.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you put your work in and know where one is, it's a good time to get in the woods there, New Hampshire. Brett, we really appreciate it, man. I hope you have a really great season.
Thank you too. You guys as well.
Now, a lot of you guys are familiar with the old hunting tradition of eating, you know, some organ, the heart or a chunk of liver off the first animal you kill. I had that when I was a little kid and it was a big deal. Organ meats were always prized by frontier people who knew the importance of getting a lot of different minerals and nutrients. And as often is the case, those guys were onto something, because organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. And you can get the same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil, made exclusively from regeneratively raised, grass-fed, and finished cattle. Heart and Soil's unique freeze-drying process means all those important nutrients are trapped in, ensuring you experience every one of the benefits of nature's superfood in a clean, convenient, taste-free capsule. Find out more at heartandsoil.co and make sure to use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase. That's heartandsoil.co. Use the code MeatEater. O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/MeatEater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/MeatEater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Now we've got Jeff Danker from Buck Ventures. Jeff has been doing some hunting over in Kansas. Jeff, how are things going, man?
Well, we got a big buck in the back and we're heading home. So, KC, I think you're doing pretty good.
Sounds pretty skippy, man. That's cool. So, how'd that go down, man? Were y'all seeing quite a bit of buck movement there for the Kansas opener?
Well, you know, we got some farms up there that we've been really babying all year and actually for the last 3 or 4 years. So, great farm. But, man, weather has really put a damper on things. And, you know, it wasn't the regular type hunt. We had to kind of adjust on the fly.
So when you say babying, what exactly you mean?
Well, I love shooting big deer, but I think I love more than that is fixing up farms for big deer and just having those, you know, whitetail haven type stuff. So just babying with food plots and, you know, keeping out of there, just keeping these farms just right for deer with water, food, everything that I can do.
Yeah. So you're probably pretty particular about what are shot off that farm, right? Like it's got to be a certain age or something like that, maybe.
Absolutely. We're shooting definitely age on what we call special deer. We do shoot some 4 year olds at times that we think just aren't going to be much. But other than that, yeah, we definitely have a strict game plan. Mm.
So y'all zoned in on one of those special deer this past week, I'd imagine. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, so basically what we had this 8-point last year that was probably 140-inch deer, and he was a 5-year-old. And really, we kind of had him on the list to shoot him, and he got by, you know, some of our guys went after different deer or whatever. And but he broke early, got in a fight, broke early, didn't think a lot of it, but then he shed early. And we're like, man, what happened to this deer? And all of a sudden, he comes back this year, and he's got a big old double main beam and junk going everywhere and just turned into a brute. And so, yeah, my dad definitely picked him out and said, yeah, let's go see if we can kill him. And that's what we've been doing this week.
Man, that's cool. So you mentioned the weather a little bit earlier. How are the crops there in Kansas? Is it a good year for crops and having whitetail movement to agriculture?
Well, so this is my deal. My thoughts on that is we had a good spring. We had some rain in the spring and up there we're at, you know, around Medicine Lodge and that area. But then it went into the worst drought we've ever seen. So crops, you know, we had some good soybeans started and this and that. So deer were getting some things. But now, guys, it's awful. It is as bad as I've ever seen it. And again, it's got me in a little bit of a whirlwind on my stuff up there. I mean, basically, we killed this deer. We basically targeted water. Everything was about water. And even, you know, obviously you can bait in Kansas and eat, they're just not wanting corn. It's a real weird deer, guys.
Man. So that does kind of sound a little bit depressing, tell you the truth of the matter. I know it's tough sometimes, but it makes it kind of fun as long as the animals are in good shape, you know, to have challenges like that come along. As you kind of look forward this season, like in the next week or so, as we have these openers happen across the country, you know, Kansas just opened up. What do you predict deer movement to be like, and what are they going to be focusing on?
Well, if I was to predict that right now, and I mean, obviously, I look at the 15-day forecast every day, and, you know, I live by guys, truly live by cold fronts, you know, drops and barometer rises. And when you get, I don't care if you get a steady 32 degrees, that 32 degrees, it just stays 32 degrees, and it's the same day every day. It gets hard to kill deer because it's hard to get a change. And then you multiply that when you get just a, you know, obviously we're going to be 101 up there on Monday.
Oh my gosh.
When you get that kind of stuff going on and that's all it is. When you look at 15 days, it's just hot, hot, hot and dry, hot and dry, hot and dry. Barometer staying the same. So as long as that stays, it's going to be tough stuff. I mean, you know, you're sneaking in. I mean, we shot this deer in the morning. Usually this time of year, we're not even hunting in the morning. Mm-hmm. We're backing way off the alfalfa fields and getting these deer right where they're fixing to lay down. And so, again, I'm hoping it'll snap out of it. When I talk to all the farmers, you know, they're looking at the Farmer's Almanac. You know, they're predicting that it ain't going to rain, and it's the first moisture we're going to get up in that area, you know, 15, 16 is snow. And so, you know, you don't know how much to take into that. But you sure want to listen to these wise old farmers, you know?
Yep. They've been there, hadn't they? They're there all year long. They kind of know what's going on in those areas, you know. Typically, the farmers are good people for that kind of thing. Now, when you guys were able to shoot this deer, was that based off of a changing weather pattern?
No, it really wasn't. We knew what the weather was going to be. I mean, a lot of times when we're after one of them biggins, we see that weather coming up and we leave him alone, and we don't hunt, you know. But I just had a feeling that this deer was going to come to water. We had a big water tank out, and we had him. I hadn't checked his camera in about 3 weeks, but last time I checked it, we knew that he was there a bunch, and we knew that he was laying down somewhere out in the grass there. Mm-hmm. And it was a great access with a good wind. I mean, that was the key to this place is Dad and him could just slip in and get in a tree stand there, and that's what happened. We just had a hunch, and hunting him again. You know, when you hunt over bait or something like that, a lot of times you can put pressure on them real quick. But mm-hmm. when you're hunting back and you ain't got to worry about coming into bait in the morning and that kind of stuff, and you just go in there and get in a tree and that know that he probably won't be there. He's out on the alfalfa field for a while. You can get by with some stuff. And that was just what we were hoping, and that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Man, so going forward for the next week, what do you predict buck movement being like on a scale from 1 to 10?
Well, I'm hoping right now bucks are they're staying real close. You either got a big buck or you don't. You know, you ain't getting a whole lot of new stuff showing up yet. So I'm hoping that'll start. You know, we'll start kind of gathering some new bucks. But again, with the weather, you know, we're going to sit here on our thumbs a little bit at the house and watch this weather. And you know, that would if I was telling anyone, if they had a big buck, you know, be careful. Mm-hmm. You know, leave him alone and let him feel comfortable until it's time to go kill him. And that's what we're fixing to do. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves here and see if this weather will come and take shape for us and maybe get a 20-degree drop somewhere, and then we'll pounce.
That's great, man. That's good advice. Jeff, what's the best way for people to connect with you if they want to see what's going on? Check out that big buck your dad killed.
Yeah, man, we've ramped up our YouTube. I'd love to tell everybody about our YouTube. I mean, we've just started our YouTube last year. You know, obviously we've been doing television for years, but our YouTube deal, we Cole Cannon heads that up as a great editor, and he's actually the guy that's over my shoulder 90% of the time. So he's running that. We're putting some good stuff out live. This hunt will be out in just a few days that we just talked about on it. You know, obviously you can come find me and Buck Ventures on Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff, and we'd love to hear from anyone.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for hopping on the phone and giving us some advice there, and I'm sure we'll talk to you some other time this year.
Well, Tyler, Casey, I sure appreciate you guys even thinking about me, and just know that I'm here at any time if y'all ever want to talk.
All right.
We have got Grant Forney with the Everyday Outdoorsman. Grant has been hunting in Maryland, way up there in the Northeast. Grant, how are you doing, man?
Pretty good. It's my favorite time of the year. Hunting season is here, so I'm having fun getting my season started here. How about you guys?
We're doing good. We've been doing other things than whitetail lately. We've been doing elk and mule deer and stuff, but got whitetail on the brain right now, dude, and you have already done the unthinkable. You've put a nice Maryland buck down, and it ain't even October yet, man. How did that go?
Yeah, it was honestly an awesome hunt. I couldn't believe it either to put a buck down that early. This is the earliest in the year that I've ever been fortunate enough to take a buck. So, it was a really good early season hunt. Very thankful to kill a pretty good buck this early in the season on public there in Maryland.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. I didn't even realize I was on public ground. So this earlier in the year, do you see a lot of hunter pressure there on public ground?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a pretty good amount of pressure, on the pieces of public that I hunt, especially opening weekend. The first 2 days, the first day of the season was last Friday. So lots of guys in the woods Friday and Saturday. So usually my strategy for that is, number one, to try to get away from guys, and number two, to really try to be as close to bedding areas as I can be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how my hunt was on Saturday morning. It was just a pretty classic example, I would say, of a buck coming back off of food, heading back to the bedding area. And I was able to catch him, you know, on his way back to bed. The other thing I had going for me was just a little bit of a cooler morning. It wasn't super cold. I wouldn't really necessarily call it a cold front, but that early in the year, if you can just get like a morning that's just cool enough, especially because of how hot of a summer we've had, you know, the deer are going to be on their feet. And that's what I had going for me Saturday morning. So I got lucky and it worked out for me.
Yeah, that's dude, you put the pieces together and that is awesome. I know that some of the other guys we've talked to seem to be saying that weather has played a huge part in what they're doing. Do you foresee that weather being an issue like throughout the season here? Is that something that's happening to you up there in the Northeast?
Yeah, for sure. It's such a huge part of the deer movement here, as you know, as it is, I'm sure, everywhere. But yeah, it's a huge factor. I think you know, here in the early season, the temperature is just, it's such a big deal. Of course, for me here in Maryland, the hunting pressure is also a big deal, but I'm looking to get out on those days where the temperature is lower, you know, relative to the days before it or the days after it this time of year. That's really what I'm looking for. You know, I might get a day or two of the week to hunt, and I'm going to pick the day or two where the temperature is really looking the lowest. Pretty much the strategy.
Mm-hmm. So are there any like unique challenges or tactics that you have for access during the early season that you may not use as much during, you know, the rut or colder months?
Yeah, I mean, nothing really too specific. I would just say in general, like, I'm very, very much in tune and very cautious about my access this time of year compared to what it would be during the rut. In the rut, you know, I'm really not quite as careful because you can just get away with a lot more, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But this time of year, I mean, like slipping in there for a morning hunt, really, my strategy for access is just to try to stay off of food on my way in, and then even more specifically, not do my best to not put my ground scent on the side of the tree where the deer are going to be coming in from.
Yeah. Is that something that you do? Is the ground scent thing something you think about much, or is that like because you're sweating this time of year going in, you're really, really worried about it?
Yeah, for sure. This time of year, even more worried about that with the ground scent.
Mm-hmm.
I really, yeah, because of like long walks in, the heat, I'm sweating a lot. I'm really not doing a lot for scent control for this style of hunting this time of year. So, you know, I'm really paying attention to wind direction on my access, and then, like we said, where I'm putting my ground scent on my way into the tree.
Yeah, man, that totally makes sense. Whenever it's so hot, scent control kind of can be a moot point at that at that point. So, yep. Yep. You were talking about food sources quite a bit here. Are you referring to agriculture food sources or natural food sources?
Some of both, mostly agriculture. There's some standing corn that butts up to some of the public I hunt right now that deer are hitting pretty good. And then there also is some natural with acorns and browse right now. So the deer that I killed on Saturday, where he came from, he was probably actually coming off of acorns on his way back to bed. So, you know, definitely some things to think about this time of year.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. So going forward, as we look towards like the next week of hunting, you know, as kind of the year starts to push on and we swing from kind of the warmer temperatures into the fall, what do you expect the buck movement to be over the next week?
I would say over the next week, it's going to be okay. I would say probably not as good as last week because mm-hmm. of, in my case, the hunting pressure that is starting to take effect on them, that opening weekend pressure. But, you know, it should be okay. I think if we can, you know, get some cooler evenings, which looks like we have some okay temperatures coming up, it should be decent.
Yeah.
If you guys want me to read it too, on, yeah. As, from yeah. 1 to 10.
Yeah. So if you were to, let me just say the question. If you were to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, looking forward, what would you think that would be?
I would say I'll give it a 6 here for this upcoming week versus maybe an 8 last week.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So a little lower, but still definitely optimistic looking forward, maybe with, you know, not quite as much pressure in the woods because people are just not wanting to get out there and hunt in the heat, I would imagine.
Right. Yeah, I would say, you know, the later part of the week will be better as the hunting pressure starts to die off. Mm-hmm. But right here early in the week, it might be a little tougher because of the heavy hunting pressure that we've seen here opening week. But I would say optimistic towards the end of next week with the hunting pressure starting to die down a little bit and some slightly cooler temps coming in.
Cool, man. So right now you are actually headed to go hunt some more. You're in a different state, and we want to wish you the best hunt of your season right now. I really appreciate you hopping on here to talk and kind of hype a little bit before you head out to the woods. If people want to see more of what you got going on, what should they check out?
They can check out the Everyday Outdoorsman on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook.
Awesome, Grant. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it.
Guys, it's sounding like a great week to get out in the woods and chase whitetails if you have a season open. If you don't, or if you do, it doesn't matter, and you're just hype about some hunting, guess what? There is a new video on the Element YouTube channel. Our buddy Tyler Jones went to Colorado and shot a great, great buck up in the high country. Super tough, super emotional hunt. Drama field, just all the stuff you want out of a high country hunt. And then also on the Meat Eater YouTube feed as well, Mark Kenyon's Deer Country, episode 2 is live, where he goes out with Clay Newcomb and shoots a really awesome buck in the Arkansas mountains. This has been Runt Fresh Radio. Y'all keep it fresh.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.